May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. On Thursday night, President Biden spoke in his first prime time address to the nation on the one-year anniversary of the first cases of the coronavirus in the United States. And after months of warning that the darkest days in the battle with COVID-19 are ahead of us, not behind us, the president struck a more optimistic tone, offering a glimmer of hope that Americans may see some semblance of normalcy by Independence Day. And he mourned our collective suffering, our collective sacrifice over this last year, but he pivoted to a more hopeful future, not with empty promises of an economy roaring back better than before, although we do hope that this might be the case, but by announcing practical steps towards the goal of ensuring that all Americans eligible receive the COVID-19 vaccine by no later than May 1st. He invited us all to do our part in the coming weeks so that friends and families may be able to join together in small groups in time for the 4th of July celebrations. The one-year anniversary is the context within which I speak to you this morning on the fourth Sunday in Lent. And casting back 12 months, I well remember our bewilderment as we abruptly shut down in-person worship with the forlorn yet completely unrealistic hope that we would be back for Easter. And in the coming weeks and months, the challenge ahead of us was to continue to be the church in the world when, for us as liturgical Christians, the weekly experience of communal gathering for worship before God was denied us. And looking back, we moved forward at first haltingly, but with gathering confidence over the spring and summer, and we perfected our podcast, our audio podcast of the Liturgy of the Word each Sunday. And after the 4th of July, while continuing the weekly podcast, we moved outside once again so that we could gather to celebrate the Eucharist in the novel setting of Orchard Place. And on Orchard Place, we discovered two things. The first was how much we liked to worship out of doors. And this discovery will not be lost as we contemplate the summer ahead when we will once again move worship outside. But the second discovery was a surprise to us. It was that we needed the Eucharist. Many among us may not fully realize the implication of this discovery. Hitherto, Eucharist was something we did when we gathered each Sunday. I often felt that the Eucharist itself was a kind of warm-up for the primary sacrament of coffee and gathering. Denied the social and aesthetic reasons for coming to church each Sunday, over the summer, we discovered a need many of us were only dimly aware of. We discovered that we needed to gather on Sunday so that we could celebrate the Eucharist together. And through outdoors worship, we discovered how to scratch the itch that we didn't know we had. Eucharist, no longer the incidental of gathering, now became the reason for gathering. On the fourth Sunday of Lent, in the three-year cycle of the lectionary, the readings we revisit today take on a very particular significance in 2021. Out of the mists of time, there comes to us the echo of events recorded in the book of Numbers chapter 21. The Israelites, a ragtag band of disparate and desperate clans and tribes, overwhelmed by the harsh experience of finding themselves thrown together in a very inhospitable environment, have given themselves over to unrestrained complaint and incessant grumbling. For them, as if to add injury to insult, a further catastrophe strikes them. In the harsh desert environment, they are afflicted by an infestation of venomous snakes. Many die. And the Deuteronomists, the scribes who much later recorded this event in the book of Numbers, liked simple explanations for catastrophes. Bad things happened because people caused them to happen and had to be corrected by God through harsh punishment. And what's fascinating about this story is not the punishment, but the cure. God instructs Moses to break the second commandment. You know, the one that says you shouldn't make any graven images. And forge an image of a serpent in bronze. And raise it up over the camp so that whoever comes within its shadow and gazes up will be cured and live. And in chapter 3 of John's Gospel, we encounter Jesus with Numbers 21 very much on his mind. He says, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up. And as the Israelites came under the shadow of the bronze serpent and were healed, so when we come under the shadow of the cross, we too are healed, because so God loved the world. And in Numbers 21 and John 3, we find instances of what I call homeopathic spiritual healing. And by homeopathic, I mean that the same toxin that kills becomes the antidote and the source for healing. And it's no coincidence that the image of Moses' bronze serpent raised up was also known to the ancient Greeks as the rod of Asclepius, or the caduceus, which has become the abiding symbol for Western medicine. And like the Israelites, under the shadow of the spiritual totem of the bronze serpent, we Christians stand underneath the spiritual totem of Jesus raised on the cross. The toxin of death becomes the source of life. The cross, an instrument of death, has become the source of the world's healing. And standing under the cross, we must remain silent and allow the power of the image to cast its deep shadow, alerting us to a different kind of inquiry. Rather than asking, how does this work? We need to ask a different question. Looking up, what do we see? And what does what we see tell us about ourselves? Standing beneath the shadow of the cross, what do we discover that will help us to chart our way forward, guided by what the ultimate symbol of God's love for the world reveals to us about ourselves and the kind of future for the world we need to work towards? Recalling the 1-year anniversary of the outbreak of the pandemic, we now live under the shadow of another kind of totem, the pestilence that walks in darkness, the destruction that lays waste at noonday, as the writer of the 91st Psalm eloquently phrases it. Under the shadow of a computer-generated image of the coronavirus molecule, we become stripped of illusion, and the fault lines of injustice are laid bare. As we look up under the shadow of the coronavirus totem, we are invited to become a future that is different from our past. And in the shadow of the coronavirus molecule, we are forced to recognize what for decades we have turned away and refused to see. The images of what lies exposed about us amidst the ruins of the pandemic, devastated world, are the very images that reveal to us the contours for future hope. Herein lies the healing path, illuminated within the shadow of the cross. Like the bronze serpent and the cross, the coronavirus totem reveals that the very toxin that has taken a staggering 500,000 and rising of our loved ones and neighbors, that has wrought global economic havoc and hardship to unimaginable numbers of individuals and communities, this very toxin must now become the source of our healing, so that we may now accomplish the things that we came here for, and waste our hearts on fear no more. Amen.